Well, it is a special edition here of the Cherokee Rewind, episode 100. Always something special when you hit the century mark, and I'm just very grateful the fact that you guys have stuck with me through 100 episodes. So, I figure if we're going to do 100, the 100th has to be special. And it doesn't get much more special than a guy who has been a part of the Cherokee organization almost from the beginning, the very beginning. Just a guy who has been through the thick and thin of it. He's seen it all, been there, done that, bought the t-shirt, you name it. Goes by the name of Todd Ohme. And well, TO, first of all, thanks for doing this. And secondly, does it feel like it's been as many years as it has been for you?
Well, first, thanks for having me on, Mick. It's always great to talk to you guys. It hasn't, it just, what does happen is the years seem to go together. I start thinking back, I've been listening to these podcasts and listening to some of the players that I've had and, going back and then remembering, oh yeah, he played with him, stint that I did with him. It was a lot of those years kind of mixed in together, but there's so many great memories. Coached so many awesome kids and players and, people who went on with good hockey careers, but even the players who end up becoming even better men, it's just always it's always good to see. I still keep in contact with a lot of them. Some are still coaching. We see them around, and some we talk to on the phone a lot. So it's been a pretty good ride.
Hey, no question about it. And that's what I want to do here for this time that we're going to be together is just, go down memory lane and look at some of the stops on that ride, because there were some very interesting ones. First off, how did you get involved in the game? What was it that really fired up your passion for the game of hockey?
Well, my dad played, and you always want to kind of follow in your dad's footsteps. And then he got on six, maybe. Actually started at the ice house where we're back at right now, and then just started playing, and just kind of loved the game. And growing up, I always wanted to be, once my career was over, always wanted to maybe do something in coaching. And right after high school, and when I was in college, I had the opportunity to help coach and just fell in love with
So where did you start coaching? Where was your first coaching job?
it. It was a all-star team. Denny Creighton was the head coach, and he asked me to come on as the assistant, and actually as the D coach, that was my primary position. And I've been coaching the defense for an awful lot of years.
Yeah, that's for sure. Now, how long were you there with them?
Just I want to say 1 year, and then I met McCarthy, Rod McCarthy, and he was part of the Team Toledo AAA program. And after a few years there, I started with him, and he was excited because he found an assistant coach was going to show up. He's had a he had a few before that started off all gung ho, and then all of a sudden 3 weeks later they didn't show up. So but he was awesome. I learned a lot from him. Toledo hockey, and actually started the Cherokees just to help some with the, so the local kids could have a place to play, or at least give them a chance if that's what they wanted to do.
I think that's the thing too that I remember was that, yeah, you had a few locals, but to be able to compete at the level you guys wanted to, which was to win a national championship, you also had to recruit outside of the Toledo area. That had to be a pretty interesting juggling act, considering, I mean, back then, I mean, and again, this is no slight on anybody, none whatsoever, but the high school hockey back then wasn't as talented as it is now. I mean, it was great for the kids that wanted to play hockey to have an outlet to play hockey, sure. But I mean, as far as being able to make the jump from high school to juniors, that was a difficult to ask. And there were some kids that did. There were a few kids that did, But I mean, to get that ultra high level, you to play, you know, in tournaments and nationals, etc. I mean, you had to go outside of the Toledo area. And tell me what that was.
Yeah. Like. One of the more fun parts of the job back then, because you would go to junior A camps, and then, you know, you would help them out their main camps, and then they would, you know, they'd have room for a guy that would help, you know, get them to a place to play. And, you know, that's where you did a lot of your, you know, you found your players. Local wise with the high school and that kind of thing, I mean, there's always kids that are playing AAA or AA or that. So that was basically the incentive. And, you know, we couldn't fill a whole team. There's just not enough arenas around. And some kids want to go to college right after they get out of high school.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, some, this was just more for the kids who wanted to take that next step. So, and Toledo area, Sylvania area, I mean, there's a lot of good hockey players there. So, I mean, you know, there's a lot of kids who maybe could play who don't play. So that gets kind of skewed a little bit number wise. But, you know, we always still have a really solid core of, you know, between, I would say between 5 and 8, maybe 10 in some days, if you count the Michigan kids that are pretty close.
Yeah. I mean, now it's different. It's totally different now. I mean, you guys have gotten kids that played at, you know, from whether it be, Perrysburg, Lake, St. John, St. Francis, you know, just over the line, some from the Bedford school system, you know, from the Monroe school system. I mean, there are a ton of guys within less than an hour's drive that are.
Right. And that really.
That really helps us.
Yeah. Sorry about that, Mick. But it helps us because families you need and billet families are always, you know, it's tougher to come by. So we've been pretty fortunate to have some really good housing people. But you're right. Earlier on, there were more kids coming from out west area, Chicago area, maybe a little further down. So we had to have more billet families back then. So it does help out having a lot more of the, you know, close Michigan kids, I will say. You know, we have probably 6 or 7 or 7 or 8 that are within 45 minutes. So they can make that drive back and forth and they don't need to be housed or billeted.
Yep. And that's, you know, I mean, that's a huge, huge help. You know, and I think for the kids too, I mean, yeah, if you can billet, you know, it's exciting. You're in a new city, you're in a new whatever, new environs. But I think also for a lot of kids too, the idea of just being able to sleep in their own bed at night, you know, not, you know, have to worry about, oh, wait, I, you know, do I go into the fridge or not? You know, that kind of thing, you know, at first,
right. Anyway,
you know, you think like that. And it's, I think just the idea of, you know, home sweet home, it does help. So now when you first started with the Cherokee, who was coaching back then?
I came on the second year. Ed Keene was the head coach the first year, and Scott Searing took over the next one. Dr. McCarthy got back a hold of me, just kind of seeing what I was doing, and asked if I would be an assistant coach of defense, and Scott would be the head coach, and Bob Zion was there. And, you know, it turned out to be a pretty good fit for us three.
Yeah, I mean, for some reason, I mean, because you guys are – all very different. You're all very different in terms of your personalities. But it was just a lightning in a bottle chemistry that really connected. And it was one of those things that from, at least like from my standpoint, again, this is just my view. This isn't, you know, anyone else's. It was good because it was, you guys were so different that you were, you're three pieces of the same pie. It's just that they were different parts of the pie. And when you put them together, it just clicked. And how long did it take you to realize that it clicked and it was going to be something special?
You know, I guess I probably appreciate it more now that it's passed. I can look back on it and say, man, you know, that really worked. When you're actually going through it, it just kind of was, this seemed like it was the norm. And, you know, I learned so much from Scott and, you know, Bob. Bob's a great X's and O man, and, you know, the different drills, and, you know, Scott's just a great manager of the bench, and knowing who needs a kick in the pants and who doesn't, or, you know, if we need to match lines or, you know, any kind of game adjustment. He was really good at that. And, you know, really learned a lot just, you know, watching, observing, and, you know, I could kind of sit back and, you know, kind of be the good cop, kind of keep a pulse of the team, kind of knew, you know, if there was a situation we needed to handle where I could, you know, talk to somebody, and ended up going back to Scott and saying, hey, look, this is what's happening. You know, we need to figure something out. Or so, you know, it worked out great. And like I say, you don't really realize it when it's really good. You know, it just was kind of the everyday thing. And, you know, then afterwards you kind of think back and like, man, that was really something special.
Well, you know, and I think, you know, you mentioned the whole good cop thing. I think a lot of the players back then, it's hilarious because they are like so loyal to all three of you, but they would always say that T.O. was always the good cop. Bob Zion was the bad cop. And then Scott Searing was like the ringmaster. He was like the staff psychologist. You know, that he kind of kept an eye on things just to make sure. But I think it's because how much of it would you think is because back then, I mean, you weren't considerably that much older than the players you coached.
Yeah, I definitely was closer to their age and had a lot more in common with them. And, you know, I think I related well and, you know, God, I still keep in touch with a lot of the, you know, within the first 5 years or so, a lot of those guys I still keep in touch with regular basis, you know, mm-hmm. if not weekly or something. You know, we're talking about, you know, what they're doing or their businesses or their families, or, you know, maybe they're coaching hockey and they have a question they kind of run by, and, you know, or, you know, heck, sometimes I don't have questions by them. I mean, you're always learning. But I just think we all kind of knew what our position was, and that's, you know, we all did it well, I guess is the only way to put it. You can't have three bad cops, you can't have three good cops. I mean, you just got to have a good mix of everything, and, you know, it really worked out.
Yeah, you know, and that I mean it was funny because I think I probably the first year I was there, which was 96-97, I think it wasn't until after the national championship that I actually had a full blown conversation with Scott, you know?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I had talked to you a few times and I mean, I'm not kidding. I can't even remember ever back then talking to Bob, you know, right. I think I said hello to him passing through the hallway or something outside the locker room or something, you know, and that was it. I mean, we talked since then, and to this day, I love Bob Zion. And of course, yeah, Scott.
Great, great, loyal guy, man.
Yes, he is. And a great, yeah, you said it, great X's and O's guy. Can't say enough about how smart that man is. And it's funny because there are guys that I've done these podcasts with that have told me, they're like, I hated him when I was playing for him. I hated him because he'd make us run through all these different drills that I hated. So I hated. But doggone it, I'm using some of those drills and some of the things that he taught me today as a coach. That's, you know,
sure.
You know, and that says a lot about what kind of, not only what kind of a guy he was, but what kind of a coach he was. He just was just absolutely just smart as a whip. And
dude, he had all these drills. He's like, Todd, you're going to need these. And, you know, back in the day, now you can get them all, you can buy them, and they're all printed out real nice on little note cards. And Bob was doing that 25 years ago. You know, I don't know.
Did it all
if he was
him.
Doing it in his classroom. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I still got some in my school that I kind of go through for something different, you know, if we need a different drill or whatever. But, you know, he was just great, great knowledge of the game.
Yes. Yes, indeed. And then Scott, like I said, we did some media after winning the Nationals in 98, and we sat there and did a couple of interviews on the radio. And afterwards, we went outside, and that's when we had our first real, long, you know, like conversation. And it was like, oh, okay. And so I'm thinking, man, this is going to be so great and stuff. And I think not too long after that, he hangs him up because he's got triplets on the way. So it's like, wait, you know. But
triplets, oh yeah.
Yeah. Then right. But of course, the thing is that he left the program in good hands because you took over. And that was
yeah, we had some really good years. I mean, we went to Nationals a couple times, and you know, just when we just missed it, or we got knocked out by Metro the 1 year, and they ended up winning it. And, you know, it was like mm-hmm. overtime loss. So we had some really good teams, really good players come through this organization.
No question. We'll talk about those in here in just a little bit. But what was the process of trying to get your coaches? I mean, I know you got Mike Witten and Kirk Ludwig. Was that
those? Correct.
Those were the original first two that you had. What was that like as far as trying to get them to come on board?
You know, I can't remember if we put something in the paper or whatever to get Mike. Kirk was just kind of around, and if I remember right, he, you know, we're just kind of talking and seeing him at the Tamworth Center and the kind of stuff. And, you know, we just asked if he'd be interested, and, you know, he said, yeah. So Kirk was a really good, high energy guy. You know, he was able to take over the role of a good cop. And Mike Witten's knowledge, you know, obviously playing for the Storm and at Western, you know, just a great hard nosed guy. Really, really good, you know, with the players also. But he brought that toughness too, you know, to the, you know, his the way he played and that kind of stuff. So that really helped out.
Well, okay. So now that was another one of those things where, again, I think you guys were a little more alike than with the whole thing with you, Scott, and Bob. This time around, the three of you were a little closer in terms of personality. I mean, yeah, you had the good cop with Luddy. Luddy was always the super friendly, super nice, and Witt, so was Witt. But he was more right. He was more reserved. He was more, you know, headstrong. He was very determined, and
right.
he brought that to you could feel it when he came, when he brought that, and he that's what he brought those players. You know, he tried to instill that in them, and yet at the same time, it was like you could tell this was different. It was your team because. They always say that a team represents the personality of its coach, and you could really tell that the guys that played for you in those first several seasons were really good kids, and they were tough kids, and they had that mentality that, you know, we got to win, but yet at the same time they knew how to have fun. You know, I mean, because that's a fine line to walk. But you know, you do that better than anybody I know, is to be determined, be focused on the objective, but have fun while you're doing it. You don't forget to have some fun, you know. And I think that says a lot more about you than it does, you know, again, about the team as a whole. You know, I mean, it says that you are able to bring that out of those guys, because that's why they become decent hockey players, hardworking hockey players, but at the end of the day, they're good men.
Right. And that was kind of the philosophy too. You want to make them a better person. And I just know if I'm not having fun with something, like it's, you know, my demeanor's a little change or whatever. So I always try to find something that I really like to do. And, you know, what's that old cliche? If you find a job you love, you never work a day in your life. And really hockey to me is not really a job, just kind of, you know, I love what we have with the players, you know, but it's good. You know, those are the kind of kids we were looking for. We found them, and, you know, it was all good.
You know, and I want to talk about just in that first, those first several years. Well, first off, you had Luddy and you had Witt. And then after that, you had some changes in there as well. I know that you had your brother, and
yeah,
if I'm not mistaken, you had AJ Rufo.
AJ Rufo for, I think he was there for a year. He was a former player, nice hard-nosed kid. Another one that was, you know, wanted to be around, high energy guy. He was real good. Bill Baker came on board for the last 2 years. He was more of a defensive coach, loved the game. And my brother, he was good. You know, he's knows the game. He's just got that hockey sense that most people don't have. So can see a different side of the game that really helped out, or, you know, could help break down different forechecks they were doing against us. So a good hockey mind. So that was good.
What was it like having to coach with your brother? Did you guys ever bump heads or anything like that during that time? Because I mean, let's face it, brothers are brothers. They're always going to love, they're going to fight, they're going to whatever, you know. But did you guys ever have that when you guys were coaching?
You know, coaching together, we didn't. Like, it was, he's been around the game. He's played it, you know, he played up in Canada. You know, he played with a lot of great players, Kurt Malby, Todd Harvey. So he's played a lot, played at Canisius for 3 years. You know, he knows the game. And I think he knew his role, but I really don't remember ever arguing anything with him or talking about it. And, you know, he never tried to big time me or whatever, you know. But when we play softball and stuff, oh yeah, we're at each other's throats at times, you know. So, but as my assistant, he was fine. And, you know, I learned, you know, from a lot of the guys that I've been coaching with, I've been fortunate that you don't treat your assistant coaches as assistant coaches. You treat them as people, and then, you know, as an equal, you know. And a lot of times just told them, give me all the advice you can give me, you know. And if I use it, I do. And if I don't, you know, don't take it personal. But that's, you know, and just like I said, just try to treat them good. And, you know, I was really pretty fortunate with the assistant coaches I've had, and actually the head coaches I've worked for, you know, it's the same thing. You know, Scott was great. I had Mike Jones for a little bit when he was at Northview. I went to Northview for a few years. Kenny's been awesome.
Yeah.
Like, he's, you know, very, very knowledgeable, but, you know, treats me as an equal and treats all his coaches that way. Like, you know, it's just how he is. And, you know, I think that's what makes it work for us now.
Well, I mean, considering the guy's dad, God bless him, and Sapp was one of a kind, and everybody loves Sapp. And, well, Kenny and Kelly are just chips off the old block, so you can't argue that. So, anyway.
No, Sapp's a great man. He really did a lot for the Cherokee program, too. Very generous man. You know, can't say enough good about him.
Well, tell me some stories about him, about your interactions with him.
Yeah, he just, you know, and actually the way I got started with Kenny was, I didn't even know Kenny. Like, I knew who Kenny was. I knew he was Sapp's son, but I had coached the 94 birth year, which was my son's age, all the way through. And Kenny or Sappy was there most of the time, you know, running it. So I got to know him pretty good. And I just didn't know, right? I knew who he was, you know, didn't, you know, I'd say hi to him or whatever. But after high school, Kyler went over there to play. And I think Scott was still the coach at the time. And then I'm not even sure how it worked out. There was a coaching change in the middle, and Kenny took over. I just sat back. Like, I didn't get involved. I just know that stand back, watch, and enjoy. And, you know, so I was sitting down in the corner, and season was going on. Sappy kept telling me, you know, he would say things like, you need to coach with Ray. And you know, I was like, you know, just kind of blowing it off. Oh, yeah, okay, you know. He's like, no. You know, and this kept going on for a couple of weeks. And, you know, I think he was saying the same thing to Kenny Ray. And Kenny Ray's like, you know, I don't really know him. You know, we don't really know each other. So long story short, we end up, you know, just meeting, or I came over and, you know, we started talking. I think it was like around the playoff time, or, you know, that last or his first season. And, you know, hired me on for that next year. And, you know, I become best buds. I mean, it's, you know, we're good buddies. Like, you know, I'm going to hang out with them. Oh, again, and you'll hear me talk about it, it's all about communication, how you treat people. And, you know, I've been very fortunate in my coaching career to be around a lot of good people.
Well, I think part of it too, though, TO, too, is the way that you can reach kids. I think, don't you think some of it also has to do with the fact that being a school teacher and the fact that you're around kids in your day job? I mean, that probably can kind of segue into what you do as far as communicating with the players that play for you.
Yeah, that has to help. I mean, at some point, because I'm used to teaching the kids and you know, getting to try to do what I want doesn't always work. But, you know, I've been doing that for 30 years. So, you know, I've had a lot of experience of, you know, working with kids and then trying just different techniques out that, you know, may work, may not work. And you kind of, you just try it and, you know, you can take that over to your coaching. And when you're working with the older players also, you know, in the biggest part really is every kid's different. Every kid's got a different personality and you just got to kind of, you know, fit it in with their personality. You know, if a guy can't get chewed on, it's not a one, but if a guy can get chewed on and you know it, you know, maybe that's the way he's motivated and some guys are motivated differently. So I think being a teacher helps me realize that sort of thing. And maybe, you know, help me get a little closer or help that player get to the outcomes that they would like.
Mm-hmm. So I was thinking too, you know, it's funny because you stepped away from the Cherokee. How long did you take off before you went back into coaching?
So when I left the Cherokees, it was, we were heading to Peoria and Kyler was young. I don't know, miter squirt. And they were going to Chicago and I'll never forget the day. And we were in our, it was my first house and we were just kind of sitting there and, you know, he was getting ready to say goodbye. And he's like, Dad, can't you just go to Chicago with me one tournament and not go with the Cherokees? And, you know, I was like, oh man, it broke my heart, you know? And that's when I kind of pulled Chris Renninger aside and kind of said, hey, look, you know, I was at this age, it's just I just don't want to miss anything, you know. I don't want to miss him playing. And you know, at that point I had probably 10 years, maybe 11 years in at the time. I think it was 2003 2004 was my last year with him, I believe. Either 2003. Okay, so that was my last. I came back in 13, so 10 years.
Yep.
But during that time, I was coaching the 94s all the way up.
Well, I was going to say, at least that way, at least you could be with Kyler and, you know, I'm sure, you know, Kelsey and Christy hanging around.
Correct.
So nice.
Little yeah. Movie. You know, yeah, I'm a family guy too. You know, it's important. Make sure you're having dinners around the dinner table. And, you know, I just enjoyed watching my kids do things. And, you know, it's part of the stuff where you don't want to miss those special moments, you know. And, you know, we only have a certain amount of time on this thing. And you got one life to live and to try to do it to the best of my ability, you know. Mm-hmm. Make sure I'm a good person.
Yep. And that you are. So, but, so what was it about, you know, you talked about how you got recruited, but what was it about getting back into the Cherokee? What really made you say, yeah, I'm going to take the dive in. I'm going to dive into the pool.
Well, it was actually kind of an easy decision because my son was, he ended up playing there. So I got to be able to watch and actually help out. So, you know, there was 2 years that I was there when he was there and, you know, the passion was still there. And so when the year after he was done, you know, I still stayed just because I love it. Like, you know, it's just part of who I am. And, you know, I felt like I still have a good relationship with the kids and still help, you know, make them better hockey players and better people.
And again, that goes back to that teaching thing, you know? So, now, you know, I want to spend some time. We're going to go back and forth all over the place here. That's just kind of how I do things, but, let's talk here for a little bit about some of the players. I know if we could talk about all of them, we'd be here 4 hours, but and I wouldn't mind it, but I'm sure you've got a few things you've got to do today. So let's talk about some of the players that have played for you. We'll start with the early years. I mean, obviously, you know, you think of guys, everyone always thinks of the names of the guys that went on to play, you know, pro, whether it be Rusty McKee, Adam Edinger, you know, guys like that. But there were a lot of really good players back then. I mean, I think of, you know, John Cotton. I think of Jason Renner.
Right.
You know, just some of these guys that.
John Jepson.
Yeah, John Jepson. Sean Bratton, you know. I think some of the funnier, Sean. Crazy guys. Tell me what you remember about some of these guys, and including, if, even if I don't bring them up, if you remember about some of these different guys from back then that played and, you know, that you ran into later or whatever, just because that's, I love good stories. And crazy.
Yeah. You know, guys like Mike Kellermeyer and Rob Kroll. I mean, they're just classic Cherokee players, and, you know, we still keep in contact, and, you know, Mike was always kind of a, just a
crazy goofball.
Made everybody laugh, you know, loved the game. And, you know, one of the things I told you, we talked about before, is, you remember he scored a goal, we were in rink one, and takes the goal. He scores nice upper, you know, glove side, top shelf, scores, puts his hands up, takes goalie's water bottle, starts drinking it. Next thing we know, we got like a line brawl going on, you know. He just getting fed, you know, and it's like, oh, did you see me win that? And we're like, oh yeah, Mike, you got two black eyes and a broken nose. You did a great job. You know, Rob Kroll, we're in Gold Cup, and he's, there's a slap shot thing, and, you know, the referee's coming over. I should throw him out, da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah, he went across the bench of the Chiefs with his stick. Oh my God!
We needed to win that game too.
Did he do that in overtime, or was that in the third?
I think it was in the third, because he ended up just giving him, I believe, a 10-minute misconduct. I don't know how Scott talked him out of it, you know. But
good
Lord. You know, John Jepson was just probably the most steady defenseman I had, you know, just solid, like, you know, make that first pass quick, get it up the ice. So him and I back then, Stone Cold Steve Austin, we were just talking about it, you know, got him 316 shirt, women, that kind of stuff. So,
oh God. Well, what's
worse? All that was good.
What's worse, that or when Steve Lidke would name his sticks?
Right. I saw that the first time. I was like, man, this guy, who knows about this guy? But he ended up being really good for us, too. Very steady, just a good, hardworking kid. You know, he was solid for us.
Oh, yeah. Tell me a little bit about John Cotton. What was he like?
He was a skilled offensive defenseman. Like, he was very good in jumping the play, and, you know, he was like a forward playing defense. Just a really nice kid. You know, never backtalked, just listened, and, you know, very, very coachable.
That's what you want.
He was young. He was young playing with us too. Yeah, if I remember that, he was, you know, but he was good.
Now, how about like Jason Renegar?
Oh, just solid, man. When he hit you, it was just bone crushing. Again, another solid kid. I coached him for a lot of years, and he's another one. Just listened, you know, play hard, you know, just the guy you'd want to have on your team.
Yeah. I always said he was a football player playing hockey, because when he hit you, the people in the other rink felt it.
Yeah, for sure.
That guy was like a tank.
Yeah, He was a heavy hitter.
Yeah, no question. Now, tell me, then shortly after that, you come across a guy named Ferenc Szatlós. That had to be a unique experience.
Yeah, he did not speak much than the guys would, you know, hey, say this, and, you know, probably shouldn't be saying that, but then they would all laugh. But, you know, as he played for us, he got stronger and stronger, and he was really, you know, by his last year, he was dominant. That relationship's really, really good there. I just talked to him probably about 6 months ago, you know, and he's doing great, and I think he's flying planes, and, you know, I can see stuff on Facebook, but he's just he was just a hard nosed kid and didn't skate, had the greatest skating stride, but man, he had good hands.
You know, and it's funny. I just, like I said, as you just mentioned, you know, about his English. Oh my gosh. I still smile and chuckle every time I hear a story about him, because it automatically goes back to buckets off, expletive deleted.
Yeah, bucket. Yeah. Bucket, yeah, buckets off.
And then, yeah. Yeah. I just smile. And the funniest thing for me was the night of the national championship. Everyone's on the ice celebrating and everything. Then everyone gets their medals and stuff. I'm still upstairs on the radio broadcasting, and I finally finish up and I go down to the locker room, and standing right side by side next to each other are Scott Williamson and Ference. And Ference yells something like, "That's right, buckets off, blankety blank," and then drinks from the cup. Scott looks at me without missing a beat and just goes, "You know, Ference's English has gotten so much better." I just think, oh,
that's
my God.
True.
Oh man, that was so funny. And now, you know, he speaks so well. His English now is so great, you know, but you know, I just remember little things like that. I remember I ran into Scott at the rink when we got back, and I looked at him and he smiled at me and just said, "Hey, mission accomplished." And I was like, yeah, that was pretty cool. And so, you know, I just, again, it was one of those things where I was like happy, but I was sad, because that's one of the things about junior hockey is you age out, you know, you only can play 4 years there essentially. And then you move on. And, you know, it was like some of those guys, you know, Hank Avink, you know, Kellemeyer, Scott Bricker, you know, trying to think of some of the other guys, you know, that aged out. And it was like, I was so happy to win the title and everything, that we won the title. But I was also bummed, because it was like, that's it for, you know, a number of those guys that I'm not going to see anymore. You know, Nicky Dychin, you know, I mean, I just think of all those guys on that team that were either going to try out somewhere else or be on, you know, move on, whether it be college or whatever. And just, you know, like I said, that was the part that I had, because I didn't know much about juniors back then. I really didn't. And when that stuff happened, it was like, you know, I didn't know what to think or feel, you know, because, you know, you don't know, you know, when's the last time you're going to see somebody. And for a lot of those guys, until doing this podcast stuff, I haven't seen since. And then we reconnect, you know, and it's been great to reconnect. But I'm just saying, back then, it was just really a struggle for me, because emotionally, you don't, you know, you don't know if you're going to see these people ever again or not. And when you bond with somebody, it's like you think, wow, man, that's, you know, we're friends, we're this, we're that. Well, you know, I mean, I didn't, again, that was one of those things. But what I've learned, and the primary person I learned it through was through you, is that
me.
Yes, is that you, even though you're not playing on the, you know, you're not on the team anymore, you can still be friends and still hang out and do stuff. And that was what you and I did for a while there. With you and your wife, we played volleyball together, we played softball, we've golfed, I mean, a little bit of everything, you know, outside of the world of hockey. And
right,
we have a bunch of mutual friends, and you know, it's like, yeah, you can do this. You can make this work. And that's what I learned from, you know, spending time with you and Christy and stuff, is that, you know, you can make this work. You know, it isn't just hockey season and then goodbye, you know?
Right. It's,
you know, so, and I think that really helped me a lot, you know, and that's why I'm more appreciative of the relationships I've made through hockey. You know, it's my other family. And You know, it's incredible some of the guys that came out of that, you know. And I think about, you know, later on, you know, whether after your first full season as head coach, you know, some of those crazy characters. Oh my gosh. I mean, you know, I think of Jeremy Labianca. I think of, you know,
right.
Luke Jones. I mean, you talk about if chirping was an Olympic event, those guys would be on the Olympic team.
Oh yeah, for sure.
You know,
getting back to what you were saying, what I found is, you know, a lot of these guys I haven't talked to in years, but you know, once you do start talking to them, it's like you've been talking your whole time. It's easy to get back acquainted with them. You know, those teams earlier on, and I only know this because we're older now, that we're real close, and a lot of those guys still, you know, get together and you know, still talk to each other. And you know, listen to some of your podcasts with the guys that just brought back some great memories. But you know, always knowing, you know, like a lot of times, you know, the guys will, you know, Facebook them, say, hey, that was a great interview, blah, 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 and we start talking. So it's good. I mean, you know, you have that relationship with them, and I don't think it ever goes away. You know, you may not see each other, but if once somebody reaches out and you start talking, it comes back.
I have to agree with you there, man. No question. It's like you just pick up where you left off. That's essentially what you do. So, you know, we talk about some, and to me, I still think the best job I ever seen you do as a head coach was the year we went to nationals in 2000, 2001 in Hartford. Because that team had some talent, some good talent on it, but it just wasn't clicking right away. And up until a little before Christmas, it was getting kind of dicey, and but you put the work in, and I noticed how hard you put that work in, because that team, especially the second half of the season, just played lights out and became the Cherokee team that I was used to seeing. You know,
right?
You know, they
yeah.
You got the most out of what you had that year.
Yeah, I don't know that we was as talented, but we worked hard, and I was having problems just trying to get that, you know, either one, getting them to believe it, you know, and see that it's going to work. It took a little while to do that. We had talent, but it was just, you know, it was going in different directions, and it's hard if you've never been a head coach, like, you know, everything comes back on you, everything. You know, every coach is like, hey, you know, this is, you know, I need to get this fixed. So, you know, most of the time your head coaches are guys because they got more stuff on their plate. But it's just being able to have good people around you to help take some of that off. And most of the time, you know, the head coaches, they put the more pressure on themselves. So you're always working harder. But, you know, I've learned that if you got good assistant coaches, they can help you with the process, or you know, maybe you're not seeing something and they can, you know, find something to help us in that way. But you know, you just want, and usually that's not our, you know, usually we start off really, really hot, go through a little lull and finish strong. This one, we just kind of are stagnant. You know, we were okay, you know, win the games we should win, but weren't winning the ones I wanted to win, like against the St. Louis's, that type of thing. So we figured a few things out, made a few changes, got the lines right, and it really went well towards the end.
Yep. And, you know, and I'm thinking, you know, back then, you know, I mentioned some of the guys when you first started, but even just after that, in those last several years, you had some serious talent. I mean, I think of the Kelly Kesters of the world, Larry Willard, Larry Ryan. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
The Larrys. I mean, it was that, those were some like seriously skilled players, high speed, high intensity, you know, just, and of course you had, some decent, you know, you had some good goaltending back then too, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Andy Reynolds, Chris Elliott were both, you know, Larry Bryan was, he was a stud, man. He was, you know, up and down the ice and just flying around, hard shot. And again, just another player that just, you know, just works. Larry Wheeler was just skilled. Like, he was real good. He was real young when he played for me. But man, he could just kind of go, you know, and I think he played there at Kelly's last year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Kelly, it's hard to say a lot. I mean, he was probably, I had a lot of good captains, you know, but he might've been the best captain to play for me. That in what I mean is, where the team followed his lead. So he got called up to Capitol Center, you know, and we said, yeah, you know, that's where, you know, that's what you want to do. And, you know, it's tough for the other assistants to come in and try to be the captain. It's just, it's different. Like, it's, you know, once you have something set and then, you know, it changes. And those guys were trying. So, and then we went through kind of a lull back then. And, you know, just had some different issues and, you know, had to get rid of a couple guys and pick up a few guys. And, you know, I got a call from Kelly. He's like, it was like right before the trade deadline. And, you know, Kelly was, you know, I think he was a third line guy there. And, you know, Kelly just, he ended up telling him he, you know, want to be traded back to Toledo, which, and he ended up, you know, coming back. And, you know, about those last 10 or 12 games were, we were just flying.
You know, it's like, I knew, you know how special someone is just because you see him for so long. And with Kelly, if Kelly was 6 foot five, 220 pounds, with his talent and speed and skill, he'd be in the NHL. I have no doubt in my mind.
Yeah.
I have no doubt in my mind.
Yeah, he would.
You know, he
a fierce competitor.
Yes. And the thing is that you knew he meant what he meant to the team, because I remember at a showcase, I remember sitting there. I wasn't wearing any Cherokee gear or anything. I was just sitting in the scouts room getting a bite to eat. And I heard a couple of scouts talking and another coach from another team out of our division talking. And they were talking about Toledo. And I think they were talking about St. Louis or somebody, but they were talking about Toledo. And they said, yeah, that number 17 kid they got, they go, he's their whole team. I've never seen a guy literally carry a team on his back like him. And he isn't a big kid. And I was like, man, wow. It's like, you know us or something, you know, but I was like, holy crap. But there were still some good players back then too, though, besides Kelly, though, that I enjoyed watching. I mean,
I was just saying more from a captain's point as a leader.
Yeah.
You know, just, you know, put the work in and guys, you know, guys would follow him, you know.
I always think just, of guys just like
his presence.
Oh, yeah. I always think of guys like Bobby Mays or Dan Mays, you know, who we, you know, just, I mean, back then, Potsy maybe, you know, just, all these guys.
That, well, Dan came around, I wasn't even sure we could keep him, you know, and we ended up keeping him, and it was probably the best move we made. He didn't play much his first year, and then afterwards he really started coming around, and he was physical. Became a, you know, back then there was a little more fighting in there, and he would fight, you know, he could fight, and, you know, he would do well. Remember the one time we were playing Metro at Metro, and I think it was Ryan Scott or Scope, I'm not sure how you say his last name. Mm-hmm. He was starting, and he goes to Danny, hey, have your coach start you, you know, I got a scout here who wants to see me fight. And so, you know, I always call him Bobby, come start me, da, 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 da. So I had to walk over to the score sheet, change my starting lineup, you know, drop the puck. him and Ryan started going at it. And it was a good tussle back and forth, but I think you know, Bobby got the best of him. But I mean, it was just, it was what he did, and he worked real hard, and, you know, again, just a great team guy.
Yes. I could sit here and do a whole thing on him. He's just a great kid. But they all were back then. They were fun to be around and to watch. And, you know, I remember too. Go ahead.
Who was the other player you said? It was Bobby Mays and who?
Oh, I was just throwing around a few names.
Oh, Potsy.
Potsy, yeah.
Potsy was another one. Yeah, we got him from Fort Wayne High School. I thought it began with an N, maybe Normandy or something, some high school I'd never heard of. I don't even know if it was a varsity sport then, but he had just, you know, a whole bunch of points. And, you know, he kind of came in and he was real just kind of green and, you know, but man, he stuck it out and played great. I think his last year he had almost 100 points, not 100, but he was.
You know, it's funny because I think about some of that time back then too with him. Yeah, is the fact that he had great hands around the net. He could finish. He just didn't always like going into the corners working hard, but he could finish like nobody's right. business. And of course, the other thing we all teased him about for a long time was that, well, we knew he couldn't fight because he tried it once, and well, that didn't go so well.
Anyway, oh yeah,
that was in Cincinnati, if I remember. So
it was Cincinnati.
Yeah,
and I'm not sure if he didn't get one punched or not.
I'm trying to remember. I can't. I think if I remember correctly, he took one wild swing to try and hit the other guy and lost his balance and went to the ice. Ended up getting up onto his knees and put his hands in front of his face just to kind of do a protect himself type thing. And everyone was like, oh my God, he's going to die. You know?
And the kid
hit him once and then just stopped because he knew he was going to kill him, you know? And,
right.
You know, because Potsy's many things, a fantastic goal scorer, a great player, but pugilism is not in his repertoire.
I agree. Much, much better skill guy.
You know, so, but I still keep in touch with him to this day, both him and Bobby, and love them both dearly. You know, I just absolutely love them.
Yeah, we were in Fort Wayne playing, and he came down to see me.
Yep. Oh, that says a lot too about the fact that some of these guys, you know, come down and see you and stuff, you know, or try to get hold of you, you know, I mean, that says a lot, Ohms, about what you brought and how you impacted these guys, you know, for better or for worse, that's your story. But, now
that's true.
Tell me about some of these other guys, just a couple more guys here in the earlier era. And, you know, because the other thing I remember, too, about Bobby was the time in practice, in tryouts, matter of fact, it was tryouts. He decided to test him. So he got challenged to test Gabe Young.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember Gabe Young. Wow.
It's like 6'5", 240.
Bobby came in. Yeah, his hands were like feet. Like, they were huge. I'm not even sure whatever ended up happening with him, but I remember when Bobby did come, like he was physical. He was trying to get underneath some of the guy's skin, and he did a couple of them. So that's when we kind of picked up on him. He wasn't afraid. Sometimes those kids come in there and it's new to junior hockey, and then, you know, they're a little timid. But, you know, Danny, he dropped them with him. And, you know, I think he probably had at least two fights that I can remember in there. You know, and that just kind of showed us what kind of kid he was. And you need a few guys like that to go into corners, or somebody's taking advantage of somebody to, you know, it's different now, but, you know, back then you had to have guys like that. And, you know, he's a great locker room guy, and, you know, he had a great career and went to Eastern, and, you know.
Mm-hmm. And now he's coaching out in Pittsburgh.
Played well.
Yep. You know, so.
Penguins elite. So that's some really good teams.
So it says a lot about him. Now, you know, I also, now, as far as Gabe Young goes, I know he was in New England somewhere coaching a few years ago, because he sent me an email a long time ago asking me if he knew where we could find any of his stats. Yeah. Yeah. And he said he's bald now. He doesn't have that, because he had that big head of hair that was dyed blonde.
I remember that.
Yeah. He was definitely unique. I will say that. And he had, you know, I mean, if he had it, I was trying to think, you know, cause he was about like 6'5", 6'6". He was a big guy.
Yeah, he was big. I remember Doug Elliott's like, well, you know, cause he was good. You know, he's like, he shouldn't be in this league or whatever. You know, I was like, yeah, I'm not sure. I remember we offered him a spot. I can't remember why he didn't take it. If he had somewhere else, he had another tier two tryout or something. I can't remember really what happened. But at the same camp, Paul Bowes was there. Mm-hmm. And his parents were out of town or something, but he asked Cozentine to fight or teach him how to fight or something. And dude, Scott just lays him out. Like, you know, he took like 10 or 12 stitches over his eyebrow, you know. So I went down there. I was like, what are you doing? Like, you know, it's a young kid. He's like, coach, he asked me to. Like, I didn't want to. He kept saying. And Paul was like, yeah, no, I asked him. I was like, oh, okay, you know.
Good night.
Man.
And Paul was happy about it. Yeah, I got laid out.
Yeah, yeah. He could fly up another wing too. Yeah. I just actually reconnected with him a little bit on Facebook too. Talked to him. He's got a nice little family going and everything's good.
Yep.
Nick Billenow is another really good defenseman, very quiet kid, very, very skilled. Mm-hmm. I remember, I don't know if it was at practice or the end of tryouts, but he dislocated his shoulder and just a tough kid. I remember going down and ended up coming in the locker room. You think he was in the referee's room, and I looked at it, man, and it was still popped out. Like, he had to go to the hospital to get it popped back in. It was bad.
Ouch.
But he was only out for a couple of weeks, and you know, I think he finished the season for us. But he was another one that was a very, very skilled guy.
Yep. And you know, it of course, now you start talking about all this stuff, and now the names start coming back. And of course, one that I'll never forget was Antonio Pomponio.
He was a character.
Man, that guy, tough as nails defenseman, was very bony because he was literally, again, when he came to us, he was like a 15-year-old. He wasn't even 16 yet. And I remember the game against Columbus, the crush, and their heavyweight. He was an overager. He was a 20-year-old and decides to challenge Antonio to a fight. And if I remember, you were freaking out. You're like, no. And he drops the gloves with this kid, and with one punch, Antonio drops him. But he doesn't just drop him. I mean, I think he broke his nose, his cheekbone, his orbital bone. And then the kid.
Yeah, orbital bone for sure. I remember that.
Yep. And then because he went unconscious, he fell right to the ice and landed on his wrist and broke his wrist. All of that with one punch.
Yeah.
And
he was a tough kid. He was thin. He needed, you know, we could put about 40 more pounds on him.
Yeah.
It would have made him, sky would have been the limit.
Yep. And because I remember him and Chris Kraft were like best friends back then. Kraft was another interesting guy.
Chris Kraft, he's a character too.
He was hilarious.
He always had a smile on his face. Yeah. Big kid from Wisconsin.
Yep. Oconomowoc, if I remember. A funny, and he was a funny kid too. And it was weird.
Yes.
Several years later, I think it was during the time with Varga, we were on the road in Grand Rapids, and we get to the rink. And everyone's getting their gear going in. And I had my stuff. And I go into the pro shop. And I see this tall, gangly guy studying a book, you know, like a school book. Like he's in school and studying his stuff. And I look over and I'm like, don't I know you? And he looks up and it was Chris Kraft and stuff. He was going to school in Grand Rapids. And I was like, and we're going, oh my God. So we, we sort of start talking and everything and laughing and stuff. And, you know, but, you know, you run into guys like that sometimes, you know, you just do. And I ran into him there. I've run into several guys from other years and stuff, you know, on the road and everything. And it's always been fun. But, you know, I was just thinking about that too. You know, Chris was, I tell you, you talk about a character, good guy. Everyone knows about my, you know, my battle here with cancer and everything that I've been doing and stuff, and I'm getting better with. But Chris actually sought me out. I mean, he went not through, he didn't know I was on social media or anything. He went and sought me out, got my phone number from another one of the players, and called me, left a voicemail saying, please call me back, blah, 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 etc. And I lost his phone number. I accidentally deleted it. And so for a long time, and then what happened, I heard the voicemail. And so what I did was I went back and I looked at my history, my phone history through my phone carrier, and found a Wisconsin number. And it was the only Wisconsin number. So I said, that's got to be Kraft. So I call and I leave a voicemail and I explain what happened. And he calls me back and we spent a long time on the phone just catching up and talking about everything, you know, some hockey related, but mostly not. And I just thought that was the neatest thing that he did, you know, for me, you know, and to do that, reach out to me like that. And it just says a lot about him. He's a good guy, you know, and still is,
yeah,
a good guy.
Great character kid.
Yeah, he just, as a matter of fact, just recently came back from vacation. The only reason I know that is because he went on vacation with Larry Willard. Their families.
Oh, together. Really?
Yeah. Yeah, their families, their kids, and all that, they all got together and went somewhere. They do frequently. Whenever they vacation, they try to catch up and stuff, and they get together and go. Still, just like I said, those were all just some of the good guys. But let's talk now for a few minutes about some of the guys when you came back. I mean, whether it was – I'm trying to think of some of the names early on. You know, obviously, guys like Pavel, you know, up to current day, you know, you had guys like Caleb Williams, you know, Anthony Weinman.
Oh, yeah. Anthony was a really good player for us. Big kid, played forward and he played defense for us a little bit. You know, just a good hard nosed kid. You know, Pavel, European style. He took a little while to get used to the game. He was not used to all the hitting and all that. And then by the end, he was good. He started to figure it out.
Trying to think. Did you coach the Pisanis?
Yes, coach the Pisanis. Yeah, both the kids. You know, worked hard. One was a little more, you know, Dom was a little more offensive than Michael. Not afraid to. Nick Verbowski, you know, he played.
Good old Verby.
Good kid. You know, just a quality kid.
Yep. Blake Mullins. And Nick,
what?
Blake Mullins, all those guys.
Oh, Blake, yeah. Actually, I was just talking to Blake here recently. He's another one. We had a discussion in there, and we were just talking about the penalty kill and just doing different things, and, you know, he was – 100% on it, you know, he would just start to lose his mind a little bit, and we still chuckle about that. You know, he ended up getting a Kenny and I shirt saying 100%, always 100%. So that was good. He's a good kid. He's actually going to be EMT firefighter also. I think he's finished with his EMT right now. He's just waiting to get his paramedic license, so that's good.
Yeah, and then that other kid that wore number 44, he wasn't too bad either.
Well, yeah. Yeah, he was good, and he's a fireman right now. He's been a fireman for 5 years, my son. So, yeah, it was good. Hockey was good for him because, you know, he could finish out his eligibility. He went to school and got his Fire 1, Fire 2 degree, then went right in the fire department afterwards. So, you know, some guys play to go to school, or some guys just play, you know, while they're in school. So, just, you know, it's different for each person.
All right. And, of course, you know, I mean, I could go on and on here. And I'll do a couple more here. Just throw a couple more that I remember. You know, tell me a little bit about what you remember with trying to think. Was it – did the Pogorskis play for you?
Yes. Yeah. I'm trying to think if that was my first year or the second year that I came on.
Because they were fighting.
Different players. You know, one was more of a grinder. Yeah. Very fight tough, just hard nosed kids too. Like, you know, they weren't afraid to mix it up. I mean, those are the type of kids where, you know, somebody cross checks them. You know, you get two cross checks back. You know,
Yeah.
So just good, tough kids.
How about, tell me about a guy who I think, who I think of as far as the current Cherokee, and a guy that, you know, I mentioned Caleb Williams earlier, but I think of guys like Timmy Organ, Bryce Davis. I mean, those guys are guys that have helped make, put their own stamp on what this Cherokee team is now.
Yeah, Timmy Organ, very, very skilled defenseman, moves the puck up well, skates well, shoots the puck hard. Actually, he's following his dreams, going to play D3 at Trines there right now. So it was a good late pickup for us. Bryce Davis is just the tricky player, just good, hard-nosed, tough, keep your mouth shut, and just goes to work. You know, you could get moved to the fourth line one day and gives you the same amount of effort every single night, every single shift. So he's our captain, and you know, it's a very good pick for us.
Yep. Now, one guy we haven't talked, we've talked a little about him, but we haven't talked much about him from a great standpoint of what he has meant to you. And that is Kenny Miller, because Kenny, you know, again, he came on late during my time there, but has always, him and his family, Sap, Kelly, their mom, you know, even his wife Stephanie and their daughter, they've all been nothing but gracious to me. They've always treated me really well, and it's not just me; they're that way towards most everybody. And that's the one thing I noted, and it just says a lot about them. And I just wanted you to talk a little bit about not only just away from the ice, but too some of the stuff he brings on the ice, whether it's craziness, having fun, that kind of stuff.
Well, I'll talk about the latter part first. And Kenny, really, we become really close. I'm getting chills right now just talking about it, just because our families are close. You know, we were over there celebrating her father, you know, Stephanie's dad's life just yesterday. And, you know, I can't tell you what they mean. I mean, they are like family to us, and Kenny's like a brother, and him and I have had some really good, you know, it just, and this is what hockey does. You find friendships and you know, people that you don't think you would be best friends with. You know, I've been in a couple of the players' weddings, you know, been to a few that, you know, invited to other weddings, and you know, like Kenny and I, like we talk every day, even if, you know, during the summer, you know, and probably see each other a couple of times, whether we're going to dinner with the family or maybe playing golf. I can talk to you if I, you know, I'm having a bad day or something, I need to talk to somebody. Kenny's a guy world to, and know that he's just going to listen, and he's not gonna, you know, judge or do whatever, you know. So he's just a really, really great friend. And you know, Stephanie and my wife are close, and Caden, you know, they're just great people. And you know, if you'd asked me before I knew him, I really didn't know him that well, and I never would have thought we'd hang out. Like, I just, you know, I just didn't see us, you know, doing that. And you know, that's why hockey's so great, and you know, things happen, you know. And Kenny's a coach, Mike Jones and Scott Searing has been awesome. Rod McCarthy, and Kenny's a great one also. Like, he's very, knows the game, watches the game, you know. Our practice, I mean, we very rarely do the same drill twice. So, I mean, he's got a whole bunch of these drills that we do, and he'll put them, you know, whatever we need to work on, whether it's chipping out or whether it's making, you know, for the defenseman, making that first pass quick, or, you know, just different things. But our practices are always different. He gets fired up sometimes. Like, you know, he wears his heart on his sleeve, and, you know, he'll get it going, and he'll chew on a referee if he needs to, or, you know, a player. But the good thing about Kenny is, you know, if he jumps down your throat, you know, 2 minutes later, he's fine. He's forgot about it. Like, he said what he needed to say, and let's move on. And, you know, some of the kids, sometimes they get big wide eyed and they don't realize. And then after they've been there a little bit, they get it, you know. So, but I've been fortunate enough to work with them. I think this is, we were talking about, it might be 8 or 9 years now. I mean, we've been together, so.
It's been a while.
Yeah, still enjoy it, and you know, I still like you know, working with them.
And probably having the young energy of Nick Sainz probably helps too.
Oh, Nick's great too. And he came on, like, you know, I wasn't really sure what to expect, you know, when he came on as player personnel. You know, I think we just put an ad on Facebook or something. I'm not even sure. We had had some other interviews and things just kind of fell through. And, you know, Nick's got that young energy and he's learning still how this process works, you know, and getting everybody and, you know, but he's did a great job recruiting. He's got, you know, really good relationships with all these kids. And that was something that Kenny and I, that wasn't our favorite part anymore. When I was younger, I loved to recruit. I was, you know, it was a battle between, you know, and I would take it, you know, real serious, and, you know, that I like to do that. And then as I got older, you know, I don't know, that drive just wasn't as, you know, wasn't as like it used to be, to get those kids and, you know, and getting those kids, you're calling kids, and, you know, you call 50 kids and maybe 20 of them respond back to you. So you keep doing the 20, 50, you know, 50 kids you talk to, maybe 20 of them get back to you. So you just keep doing it. And Nick's done a great job the last couple of years getting us some really good players. And, you know, he's done it again this year. You know, we just got done with camp and we're excited. I'm excited. But he's got that young energy and, you know, I think it's working.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay. Now, got just a couple more parts here that I want to talk about for a little bit. And again, we're going to go back down memory lane. Tell me.
Stop. Make sure.
What's
it's
that?
Not too long.
Yeah, I know.
So I don't want to make sure.
Yeah. Wah, wah. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. I don't want people to turn it off.
Dude, this will probably be the most listened to one ever. Okay.
Oh, yes. I'm Nick.
Stop it. Just stop it. Now, because number one, even your own head coach refers to you as a Toledo legend, a coaching legend for the Cherokee. What? I didn't hear you. I'm sorry.
I said, let's go in a different direction than where that's going.
Yeah. Well, all I'm saying, I'm not going to dwell on it. I know how uncomfortable you get, but let's face it. With the number of people that still keep in touch with you, the number of people that still seek, whether it's just a joke around or it's sometimes a coaching tip, people that you started out this relationship with Kenny and didn't even know him, and you went from that to being best buds. I think he might bring a little something to the table here. Okay, so just get over it, embrace it, and just move on. So there, I said it.
Sounds good.
Fight me. Anyway, so no, I want to go into talking about the coaches you've coached against over the years.
Some good ones. Yeah, some real good ones. John Cooper, really good coach here. We lost to him in overtime, and then they end up winning the national championship. But he was good. Flags, and he was a Grand Rapids when I was coaching. Another one, just knew the game and knew you had to bring your A game. You know, you knew they were well coached. They were going to be, you know, disciplined, and, you know, so.
Yeah, and also the fact that I learned, first of all, the funniest human being that I ever came across in the CSHL was Jeff Lang. Langer had a way of just making me like fall over to where my ribs hurt. He would make me laugh so hard and just telling stories. He would talk about stories and comment on them. And that's what got me going. He would just start and he would make me laugh so hard. And of course, then you got other crazy characters. I think of Bob Jacobson out in Cleveland.
Oh. Yep, Bob. He's a beauty.
Never saw
Jack Behan.
Yeah, never saw Bob. Yep, never saw Bob without a cup of coffee.
Yeah, that's true.
Him and Mike Robertson, same thing. Our former GM, never saw him without a cup of coffee. It'd almost be like seeing him without a shirt on.
That's true.
And in Bob's case, I think I actually saw it once. He took his shirt off when he was outside of a bus trip. and I was scarred for life. Anyway,
I will say about Mike Robertson, he had no hockey knowledge coming in, and he was you know, hanging around. Mm-hmm. And started doing a lot of the odd jobs, and then he ended up being a general manager when I was around. Like, I could ask him to do some things. He did some things. So I thought that was kind of cool that a guy that really didn't have any hockey background that, you know, put a lot of time into Cherokee. So a little shout out to Mike.
Oh, no question. Mike and Diana, I think they started out as billeters, didn't they?
Yep.
Yeah.
Housing. Yeah, Bill. Yep. Housing.
So
that was good.
But they started out as that and just did it the old-fashioned way. They worked their way up. So, you know, and became real key components of the Cherokee organization during that time. And, of course, we couldn't talk about them either if we didn't talk about Tom Higgins when he was GM. And Higgy was just a piece.
Yeah, he was after me. He came. Yeah. I knew him before. I didn't know him as a general manager, but I knew him. He's a good hockey, good Toledo hockey guy, too.
Yeah, no question. Toledo area. Amen to that, man. But I remember, and Jack, oh my gosh, Jack Behan, St. Louis. I used to tell him, to this day, I still tell him I hate him because of all those national championships. But Jack and I are close. We still keep in touch and talk on the phone, and we'll talk, you know, and stuff. And I'll have him on my radio show, all that kind of stuff. And anyway, but I remember one time, we were out at it was during, I think, when Varga was there. They changed the name from Gold Cup to Hurster Cup, and they had it in St. Louis, and Bob was coaching during a game. Cleveland was playing. I think it was they had three teams going to nationals, and they offered a spot in the tournament to a junior C team, the Mass Maple Leafs. And it was like Bob was playing that team, and it was a close game, but they were still beating them, but it was close. And Bob's on the bench right there at the end of the bench. And if you remember the Afton Arena, Todd, where that little area between the benches, you could literally walk right in there and stand there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Jack is in there, and I'm standing there, and we're watching the game, and Bob's standing right, like, about 15 feet from us on the bench, and he's got his cup of coffee there, and he's trying to get a playoff beard going, and of course, it's real scuzzy, and it's kind of reddish brown, and so Jack just is unloading on him, making all kinds of wiseacre remarks. I mean, it, of course, the coup de grace was when he looked at him finally, and he goes, you know what? He says, you look like the leprechaun on the Lucky Box, on the Lucky Charms box of cereal. And I'm sitting there shaking like Jell-O, going, Jack, please stop. I'm just begging him, please stop. And Bob is about ready to stroke. He's ready to have an aneurysm. His eyes are so big.
I'm sure his face gets, yeah.
His face was redder than his hair. Yeah. And I mean, it just so, and then, so Bob ends up winning, and he ends up qualifying for nationals, and Jack sends him a box. He ships him a box to Cleveland of Lucky Charms. And
that's awesome.
That's just typical Jack, you know? And, I remember it was like a couple, I don't know how many years later it was, several years later, Jack steps down. He's like, you know, I've done enough, blah, blah, blah. He's retired from coaching the junior team. Well, Bob calls him out of the blue and asks him if he'll, you know, he says, what are you doing? He says, nothing really. He says, I'm got my Gone Fishing hat, sign up, and that's about it. You know, not really doing anything. And he says, well, why don't you come coach with us? And he made the numbers work. And made the time frame involved work. And so Jack thought about it and finally just said, why not? You know, and they made a deal. Bob made him a deal he couldn't refuse. And so he calls me, Jack does. He says, are you going to be at the game tonight? It was a Friday night game. So I said, no, it was during football season. So I said, no, I'm going to be, you know, doing a football game for TV. I said, so, you know, I said, he goes, oh, he says, well, he says, I was going to have a surprise for you when you got to the rink. And I said, well, maybe I'll stop by after my game. I said, if I can get out early enough, I said, I'll stop over. Well, I did. So I go over to the rink, and it's in the third period, and I'm walking in through to the rink, and I had gotten Zeke to cover for me, and I'm getting ready to walk up the steps, and who do I hear yelling? I hear this big yell of, you know, move that puck, move that puck, move that, and he's screaming in that high-pitched voice that Jack has.
Oh, yeah.
And I sit there, and I'm going up the, and I'm hearing it, and I'm going, oh, my God, I know that voice. And sure enough, I look across, and I see Bob over there with his cup of coffee, and right over there next to him is Jack. And I'm going, Jack, you're wearing the wrong shade of blue. Well, I leave the rink, and I run to the store, and I get a box of Lucky Charms, and I go back, and I find the bus, or their bus, and the bus driver was still in there. So he opens up, and I go, here, I'm leaving this for the coach. He goes, well, he's sitting right there, or his seat is right there. And I said, okay, thanks, appreciate it. So I said, he'll know what it means. And so I left the box of cereal, the Lucky Charm cereal there, and I go back. And so I go back in there, and I'm like, Jack, what are you doing? You know, and he's like, eh, just thought I'd just help Bob out and have a little fun. And again, it tells you the thing that you can yell at each other, make each other really mad, but at the end of the day, when you're competing against each other, that's one thing, but you leave it on the ice, and then you go back to when you guys are away from the ice, you can get along and be friends. Well,
right.
Bob and I always got along. We just did. And I still think the world of the guy. And anyway, he walks. I said, you know, you guys, good to see you guys, blah, blah, blah. Have a great road trip back. You know, be careful. And so I leave. I get a text back from Jack. And he says, did you leave a box of Lucky Charms for Bob? I said, yes. I said, I can only imagine his response. He said, yeah, if you were thinking along the lines of, you know, F you, then yeah, you were right.
Right.
You know, I was like, oh my gosh.
Don't ask.
You know, just typical. You know, and that's how we were back then though, man, is that you competed like heck against each other, but you could still go out and have a pop afterwards and you know, laugh.
Yeah.
About stuff.
We did that a lot with a lot of the coaches. I mean, everybody's in the same boat trying to, you know, the game's going on, you're trying to win, but afterwards it's like, hey, you know, hanging out, having a couple sodas. So
what do you remember about Kevin Loon?
Good coach. You know, the blonde hair is really a lot. Yeah. But he always had good teams. He was a good recruiter. You know, his teams are always hard-nosed, tough to play against. Good guy. I liked him.
For some reason, I always think of Mike Flanagan when I think of Kevin Loon, because they were kind of two peas in a pod, you know, just that real tough.
Yeah, Flags. Yeah, Flags is great. I mean, it's the same thing. You could you know, have a conversation or go out to dinner with him after the game was over, you know, or if we were down there, he's like, hey, go here, you know, blah, 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 blah. But he was good, and was, you know, good hard nosed kids, and you know, that's what you want, is to play against well-coached players.
Yeah, no question about it. So, okay. So, who is the team that you would get most fired up for? Who is the team that really got under your skin when you had to get ready to play them?
Well, there's a couple of them. Sometimes it had to do with what year it was. Metro one year, Chris Wursting was there. They had that Andrew Cote kept running our goaltender, and you know, it was pretty personal back and forth. Like, I remember screaming at Wursting, you know, I'm yelling, if you can't, you know, so I kind of lost my cool. I tried not to do it too much. You know, I prided myself on never being thrown out of a game, you know, so I tried to stay within it, you know, try to a new one to back off. So that Metro team, it was a lot of rivalry there. But then the Columbus crush, man. The Parks, they played for Eric Park, played for us, and his dad ended up buying a team there, and they put it in there. And they really wanted a rivalry, and you know, we were playing in rink one at Tam O'Shanter, and then a goalie named Gregory was a Canadian. He was a good goaltender too. But during warmups, he kept shooting pucks at our players. So we'd be skating around, you know, half ice, whatever. And these pucks would come randomly and like hit our guys in the shoulder and stuff. And I forget, I talked to one of them and I thought it was Danny Mays. You know, I said, if he does that again, I said, I want you to shoot it back at him. And something happened, and all of a sudden, we have a full brawl. Rank one at Tam O'Shanter. Telling you, there's 15 guys fighting. And the referee, I'll never forget, is Dieter Keys. I didn't care for him either. He was still in the locker room. So me and other coach, I thought it was Kevin Loon at the time, but maybe not.
For Columbus.
Yeah. Did he? Did he coach there?
I'm sorry.
Who? You know? Did Loon coach in Columbus for a year?
Oh, I couldn't tell you. I don't remember. I couldn't tell you.
I thought it was him. Well, anyways, we're both pulling players off each other and trying to get everybody back in. And, you know, Dieter Keys comes out and starts screaming, da, 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 da. And both of us are like, dude, you're supposed to be out here. You know, so I don't remember. I think we each had two good. They had to suspend two guys, and I think they kind of let us pick who it was, because back then there were no cameras or anything going. Mm-hmm. And then we go down to Columbus one time, and you know, they're all hyped up, and you know, we're getting on the line, and you take your helmets off right before the national anthem, and they're supposed to announce both teams, and they just announce their names, and our guys are just kind of waiting there, you know, with our hands in the air, like, what is going on? And then they just end up starting, you know, just playing. But I do remember we beat them by about 6 goals that game. So that was good. Yeah. So.
Oh, man, I love this. Oh, I tell you what, Holmes, I could do this forever. But I know I before we wind her up, who would you say was probably the – were there any guys that, as far as from your coaching, that – you aspired to maybe be like, or imp, like try to coach like them, or any, were there, did you have any role models of any sort when it came to your coaching?
Coaching wise, no, because I really didn't know. I really didn't know. I told you before, you and I talked before, I had a PE teacher named Tom Ball. That was just a great, I mean, he always made you feel good. Like when you talk to him, I always felt like he was listening if I talked to him, and, you know, we go through the class, and I actually became a PE teacher because of him, because, you know, he had such a great rapport with us. But I always remember him talking about how important communication and relationships are. And this was back in, you know, early 80s, you know, mm-hmm. maybe. And, you know, so I just kind of did it off that, like, coaching wise, like I didn't really watch enough pro hockey to say, hey, I want to be like this coach. But you know, I think I kind of just had my own, and working with, like, you know, Doc McCarthy growing up, and actually I played for Greg Jablonski, and he was really kind of a player's coach also. So I always thought, you know, maybe that's it. I need to be more of a player's coach than just a guy who's, you know, being a dictator out there, you know.
Okay, that's fair enough. All right, well, hey, geez, it's been fun. You know,
I enjoy it.
Yeah, I enjoyed this a lot. I mean, like I said, I could do this all day. But I always end my podcast with two things. First one is, what would the Todd Omey of today, what advice would you give to that guy who took, who became an assistant coach in the second year of the Cherokee's history?
Enjoy it more. I think I did enjoy it, but I didn't really appreciate it, if that makes sense. You know, mm-hmm. you just kind of thought that's how every day was going to be. And, you know, as I look back at it now, man, those were just some great times and some, you know, great opportunities I had. Just make sure you enjoy the time and actually take it in and look back and just kind of see the good that you, I guess that would be it.
Well, okay. And then the other thing is, what would you like to say to Cherokee Nation? I always end it with that, in that telling, you know, whether, you know, it's your alumni, some of your players, even current players, alumni coaches, fans, a lot of fan base. What would you like to say to them?
Well, I guess the only thing is, you know, once a Cherokee, always a Cherokee. I mean, our fan base now is unbelievable. You should talk to some. They love coming here because we packed the house. I mean, we play at Metro on a night. You know, there might be 800-900 people in there. And it's packed. And we just had our main camp here, and we had, you know, a whole bunch of fans cheering and yelling in the stands. So, I mean, it's just, you know, once a Cherokee, always Cherokee. Enjoy it. Don't be afraid to reach some point. Stop out and come watch a game.
Okay, roll tribe, baby. Sappy strong. Well, you know,
yep.
And I got to tell you, it's been a treat catching up with you again. Thanks for doing this. You know, it's
no problem. My pleasure.
Always a blast. Well, that's going to.
And if I did mention you, I did not forget you. So.
Yes. Funny guy. Anyhow, thanks to Todd Omi. Episode 100 is in the books. Hopefully we'll, you know, now that we've reached the century mark, we can roll on with 100 more, or well, even beyond that, hopefully. But for Todd Omi, the Toledo Cherokee legend, whether he likes it or not, I am Mick saying so long.
Oh, God.
Hey, get over it. You are. See you next time right here on the Cherokee Rewind.